From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. When I was growing up in Los Angeles, California in the 1960s, my radio station was KRLA, and my favorite disc jockey was Dave Hull. Dave Hull played all my favorite songs, and above all, Dave Hull was funny. Dave Hull has written a memoir of his years on radio and television called Hullabaloo, The Life and Misadventures of L.A. radio legend Dave Hull. And now a dream comes true for yours truly, as I say, Dave Hull, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. It's an honor to be here, and your folks up there that are listening to you in Santa Cruz. That's a beautiful area to be in.
It is. It's a beautiful day today. You know, Dave, we've actually met before, and I am sure that you'll remember me. In August of 1966, I went to see the Beatles at Dodger Stadium, and you were the host of the event, and I was sitting in the stands about two sections up on the right-hand side. I was wearing a Beatles sweatshirt, and I was screaming. Do you remember me?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you had longer hair then. You looked a lot younger.
A little younger.
I remember exactly where you were.
That was quite a night.
It was, and the place was packed. In fact, Dodger Stadium became Beatles Stadium, remember? And that was the biggest performance on the West Coast, west of the Mississippi, up to recent times. But it was really a knockout show. It really was, Gary. And I'm glad you were there and privileged I was to be on stage. It was a great moment.
I remember that there were big KRLA letters in the front of the stage. And that you guys were there, you and the other DJs from KRLA. And that was part of the thrill for me, because you guys really changed my life. You know, you brought this great music to me. And you were particularly the guy who was connected with the Beatles. How did that happen?
Well, you know, quite by accident. I was doing a radio show nightly on KRLA called... it had to do with homework and was called Homework Hotline. And people would call and give me a question that stumped them at the high school and college level. And I'd go on the air with the person, pardon me, and I'd present the problem, and then people would call from all over. Well, fortunately, Pasadena is home to Caltech, one of the brightest brainiacs in the world. And so they would sit there and listen to the show because of the music and the humor. And then when they'd hear a question that they knew the answer to, they would call. So it became a number one hit, Homework Hotline. And one day I was down at the beach where I was living with my brother in Seal Beach at the time. And Dick Moreland, our assistant program director, called me and said, you're going to become the president of the Beatles fan club. And I said, Dick... Well, what does that entail? He said, it entails anything you want it to be. I said, well, if that's the case, Dick, then I'm going to become the president, vice president, secretary and treasurer, and sergeant at arms. He said, I don't care what you are, man, but get it done starting at 9 p.m. tonight. So I venture to say that I was the luckiest guy in L.A. at the time.
Now, had you had heard the Beatles, you were a Beatle fan, or was that unimportant?
No, I became a Beatle fan, but I had heard the Beatles when I was the operations manager at WVKO in Columbus, and we had heard the Beatles sing, and their record, I can't remember, it was prior to I Want to Hold Your Hand, and we listened to it, and we all turned thumbs down. We said, no, this is not going to go on the playlist, and it didn't. And that was my first indication that there was such a group called the Beatles, and that was 1962. See, I didn't get out here until 63, and we didn't start the Beatlemania until 1964.
But then you actually became, you know, you were well acquainted with the Beatles.
Well, fortunately, yes. Because I made some bold moves on my own, Gary. I, first of all, had to have some information about them that KFWB, which then was our music competitor, and KFWB didn't have a chance against KRLA in their signal strength and in our personnel. So I decided one day I'm going to call information in Liverpool and I'm going to find out George Harrison's mother and father, which was George and Louise Harrison. So I called the information operator. She gave me the number. I called. The only problem was I called at, I think, 3 or 4 in the afternoon our time. It was 1:30, 2 a.m. in the morning there, or something near it.
They must have been thrilled to hear from you.
She was so thrilled. She told me in a British way, as so customary to classy, that it was the wrong time to start this friendship. And would I think best of calling her at 10 o'clock, which was 2 or 3 in the morning our time. I told her I apologized, and I did. And from then on, Louise Harrison and I, Gary, became the best of friends. And I can tell you this, we finally told in the book that you mentioned, Hullabaloo, that she was my spy. It was Louise Harrison who gave me the addresses, the phone numbers, who the girlfriends were, where they lived, how you could get a hold of all four of the Beatles. And it turned out to be the greatest spy in American history, as far as I was concerned.
Well, now, speaking of George Harrison, I remember this. The night before the Beatles album called The White Album, people call The White Album, was released, you and George Harrison played every single track from the record, and George talked about each one.
He did, and that was kind of unique because nobody played albums. Very few radio stations. Oh, there were some FMs like yours at 88.9, but for the most part, radio stations in the 60s until the 70s and 80s came along, they didn't play album cuts. Well, we put the album on, and then as it would track to the next one with the engineer, George Harrison would talk about each one of the cuts. It was remarkable for the time, and I'm glad you brought that up.
I remember it well. Now, do you have a tape of that?
No, I do not. You know, people ask me that question. Do you have a tape of this or that? Did you save this or that?
Mm-hmm.
I would have to have a storage locker as big as, you know, the Empire State Building to hold all the stuff I've done over time and that people have sent me. So, no, I don't.
And, that would have been a good one.
Yeah, it would have been. And looking back now with hindsight, it would have been a great one to keep.
How did you get into radio, Dave Hull?
Well, that's interesting, too.
Because the radio is very small. I don't know how you could climb in there.
Well, that's interesting. My mother wanted to take us to see a live radio show in Hollywood. And we went to Columbia Square. And we went to see a show that went across the country, came out of L.A. Ken Carpenter was the announcer.
Bing Crosby's announcer.
I beg your pardon?
Bing Crosby's announcer.
Yes, that's correct. Ken Carpenter, there were a couple of fellas that did the Meet Corliss Archer show. But the night that I was there with Mom, it was Ken Carpenter. And he just was warming up the audience. And I was sitting there with my sister and smaller brother. And he would begin. He'd say, "We're going to start now at exactly 6 o'clock. When you see that hand come up at 6, we want you to laugh and have a good time. But before I do that, I want to tell you a story." Now, we were at 30 seconds to airtime, and I'm thinking, this guy is going to make one hell of a mistake here. He's going to be talking when we should be applauding. Well, he stopped talking with his punchline at 1 second to 6 p.m. The place went nuts, and Ken Carpenter said, "Now, from Hollywood, it's Meet Corliss Archer." And I thought, God, that's something I want to do. I was about 7 years of age at the time, Gary, and that's how my love of radio began in my own life at 7 years.
And so instantly you became a 7-year-old disc jockey. Is that...
No, I didn't become... I told my mom I wanted to be that's what I want to do in life. I want to be a disc jockey. And she said to me, and it's in the book, "Shut up and watch the show." Well, I got clubbed, but I knew then what I wanted to do. And Mom, in later years, she's gone now, but in later years she swore she never did say that, but I want you to know she did. Shut up and watch the show.
Well, nobody ever said that to you again.
No. Well, I don't know. But that's how things began for me. Then, of course, I went into the service, and I became a very talented key code operator for sending highly classified messages in North Africa. Now, so one day I was going from my assigned area in Medina Hill, watching the Mediterranean Sea for the movement of Russian vessels, because we were then in the Korean War was closing up, but at the time it was still going on, and the government wanted us to watch the ships into the into the Mediterranean Sea. And it was my job to send the coded messages in classified code around the area to different locations so they'd know where the vessels were. Well, one day I had a couple of days off from that kind of stuff, and I went into the radio station and I said, "How do you get on the air here?" Well, unbeknownst to me, one of the guys had just had come back from overseas. He had his tour of duty over in North Africa was over, and nobody on the staff wanted to do the show. He said, "You've got a classical show to do at 6 p.m. tonight. Here's the script. Don't worry about the music. It's already on disc. Go to your barracks and learn this stuff so you can memorize what you need to." Well, I said, "I've never been on the air." The guy said, "You are starting tonight." Now, that, after all, that was my life's ambition. So I said, "Okay, I'll be back." So I went to my barracks. It was just a hut in North Africa. And I sat down to read what it was. And everything in this aria and concert, a classical work, was written in German. I've never spoken German in my life. So I decided, okay, I've got two things to do. Give up my life's ambition, just go to the radio station, return the script, tell them thank you, no thank you, or go in and fake it. So I decided, okay, I'll go in and fake it. So when I went on the air at 6, they assumed I knew German. I just decided I'll make up the words. Well, General Jackson was the one-star general who ran the base at Nuwasoor Air Force Base in North Africa outside of Casablanca. And he had a two-star general, a higher-ranking general than himself, who was staying over for a few days, and he wanted to show him his favorite radio show, this classical show that came on at 6 o'clock. And here is this clown who's never been on the air in his life. Well, I start in and I say the Concerto con de Schumann was written by Haldor Forpadorber. I just couldn't read it, so I just made up the words. Well, the two-star general began laughing out loud, and he told General Jackson, "I see why you love this show. This guy is amazing," because the two-star spoke fluent French, German, Italian, Spanish. He was a linguist, and so finally the brigadier general didn't want to say anything to embarrass himself to the two-star. So the next day, General Jackson called the office, the radio station, and asked to speak to Airman Hull. Well, Lieutenant Gary was our unit commander, and he had a major above him. And they got together and said, "General Jackson wants to speak to Airman Hull. It's over. It's all about that show last night, and he's finished. So get ready to have somebody else take the show." Well, they sent a car for me. General Jackson sent a car for me, a staff car, to pick me up to go see him in his office. And everybody figured I'm finished. I'm dead meat. Well, a five-stripe enlisted man, a tech sergeant, drove up to pick up a guy that has two stripes on and had to open the door for him. So I sat in the back with the five-striper driving the staff car. Well, he was not a happy camper. We got to the general's office, and the staff sergeant in charge of the office said, go in and report as ordered, report formally, and the general will take it from there. So I did. I snapped to attention, Airman Hull reporting as ordered, sir. And for the first time in my life, an officer had told me, not at ease, but have a seat. Have a seat, Airman. Oh, my God. There was a couch there. When a general tells you, have a seat, he was on the phone. I'll be right with you. You do what you're told, because a suggestion from an officer is not a suggestion. It's a command. You understand that?
Yeah.
Yes. So I sat down and waited for him to finish his conversation. And finally, the general said to me, I found your show to be highly entertaining last night. You don't speak a word of German, do you? I said, No, sir, I've never taken German. Do you speak any language? I said, yes, I speak fluent Spanish, and English is pretty fluent. He said, well, I want to ask you a question. What do you think of this idea? Now, this is coming from the commander of the base. He's going to ask a man with two stripes on his sleeve, Gary, what do you think of this idea?
So whatever the idea is, you're going to think it's great.
Of course. I'm going to stand up and cheer. So he says to me, Airman Hull, what do you think about the commander speaks? It'd be a 15-minute show after you're finished with your classical show, and then I would come on the air. I said, that is brilliant, General Jackson. That is the best thing I've ever heard in my life. So anyway, he said, well, then which studio would I come to record it? I said, General Jackson, I'll bring the equipment to you. I will load the day that you want to do these shows. I will come in at the time you specify, and I'll bring whatever, the microphones, the mixers, whatever you want. He said, you can do that. I said, of course I can. So he set a time for that guy, the five-stripe guy, to pick me up in the staff car with all of the equipment. Now, everybody at the radio station, I'm telling you, Gary, wanted to be part of this. They all said, gee, I'll help you. But in those days, the equipment was as heavy as a desk. You know, it took two or three men to lift them. Well, that didn't set well with them, so they said, no, Hull, you're on your own. Anyway, that's how I got started in broadcasting, and that's how things progressed from there with General Jackson as his commander speaks. I will say one thing in addition to that story. One day, the airman's pool, our swimming pool, had it broke down, and the NCOs, the non-commissioned officers, wouldn't let us use their pool. And the commander asked me, General Jackson, what do you have an idea for a show we can talk about? And I told him the story. The airman's pool here has broken down, and the men haven't had a chance to go swimming. And the temperature then was 125, 130 degrees in the Sahara Desert. And he said to me, would you do me a favor? I'll go to the officers' club, and I'll order them to give you men 3 days a week. So he gets in his staff car with that five-star tech sergeant. He goes off and says to me as he's leaving his office, would you do me a favor, Airman Hull? Would you write that story? There's the typewriter. Why, my God. I said, of course I will, sir, and I'd like to have it done when you get back. He went to talk to the officers' club about having them enlisted men use their pool 3 days a week. And when the commander of the base comes in and makes a suggestion, it's an order to them, too. So they said, of course. I began writing, and I was sitting there at his desk, writing, typing on his typewriter this story that he was going to give. I began to realize, I, Airman Hull, am the commander speaking. So I began typing and typing, and when it was done, he loved it when he got back.
Hey, we're talking with Dave Hull. He's a legendary radio personality and military hero. And his new book is called...
Military hero!
His book is called Hullabaloo, The Life and Misadventures of L.A. Radio Legend Dave Hull. So you came to Los Angeles after you were in New Mexico and several other places.
Yes, and I mustered out of the service at Walker Air Force Base, the Enola Gay Air Force Base, and then I went to work at a radio station in Roswell. I listened to the radio guys, and they were terrible. And one day I called the general manager, Walt Whitmore, at KGFL in Roswell, and I told him, I said, the guy you've got on at night is terrible. He just simply is terrible. You need to hire me. He said, who are you? I said, my name is Dave Hull. And he said to me, if you're so good, what are you doing in Roswell, New Mexico? I said, I'm at the Air Force Base. There's nothing I can do about that. He said, come on in tomorrow morning at 10. Well, unbeknownst to me, he could just sit there and throw a switch and listen to me cutting my audio tape, my demo tape. And after it was over, I brought it into him, and I said, well, I made a lot of mistakes. He said, I know, and you cuss a lot, too, because I listened to the whole thing, and he showed me this switch. He said, all I had to do, I don't need your tape, but I got to tell you something. You're better than the guy on at night. You start tonight at 9 o'clock. And so the guy, I never did meet him. He was let go, and I went to work in Roswell, and that's how it all began commercially here. Then I went on to Dayton, Ohio. The Ron Woodyard was driving through there, and he was the owner of WONE in Dayton, and he said he stopped his car at a gas station and said, will you come and work at my radio station? I said, of course. He said, how long will it take you to get there? I can be there in 20 minutes. You know, just give me a road map and tell me how to get there, and I will. From then I went to Detroit, and after Detroit I went to Columbus, and from Columbus, Tampa, and out here to the West Coast.
Well, you know, I was mentioning earlier that you were and are extremely funny on the radio, and I was wondering, did you ever consider a career as a comic?
No, that never did really cross my mind, because a stand-up comedy was not a big thing in the 50s and 60s. That really didn't happen until the 70s and 80s. And I never thought about working on FM, because that really didn't happen until the 70s and 80s and 90s. No, a stand-up routine I've never thought about. I have spoken to big-sized audiences, but I've never thought about comedy. It just comes out of the top of my head, you know, when I need it.
How much of your show, and maybe you're saying all of it, was spontaneous? Well, what did you plan? How much did you plan when you were on the air?
Well, I'd have an outline. I still did that right up until the last broadcast before I retired. I would write a couple of notes, pull stories out of the paper, Gary, like I'm sure you do, and then I would make some notes and carry those stories into the station. But for the most part, radio is spontaneous. It's off the top of your head, just like us right now. I mean, if you're a good storyteller, you'll be great in radio. If you're not, find another form of work.
How much did it matter? I was asking you this, I guess, in a way earlier. If you loved the music, liked the music, hated the music, because now you've been a disc jockey in other formats, not just rock and roll. Did you love rock and roll music?
Yeah.
And how much was that important?
It was very important to me, because I grew up with popular music. I was thinking the other day about the songs by Perry Como and that were big during the 40s. Remember, I was thinking of radio and listening to radio before most of your audience was ever born. So when you think of it in that light, you're thinking of Perry Como and many of the stars from the 40s and 50s, but it was always a hint towards popular music. top 40 really didn't come in until the 50s, when I was starting in Roswell and Dayton and Columbus and Detroit. So, but popular music was always my favorite, and that's why I've always stayed with it.
But, you know, when the Beatles came around, or when music changed so radically in the 50s and 60s, you embraced that. And I mean, you know, at the time that you were the voice of KRLA in my little boy's world, you were older than 30. And that was a time when, you know, people, the now generation was under 30.
Yes, that's true. And you have to tune yourself younger if you're going to be a success on radio, because you have to bring yourself down to the thinking level of teens and young adults. If you don't do that, you're going to wind up in a different profession. So I did do that, and it worked remarkably well for me. But popular music was different then, by far, Gary, than it is now. And then we've seen music change from rock to hard rock to disco, which I really loved. I loved the disco era. And to now hip-hop, and I can't make sense of what they're singing about, Gary. And I know I'm older, but give me a break.
Have you heard that Catch a Falling Star and Put It in Your Pocket? That's a wild record.
Pardon me, I do remember that.
Now, you kind of left the Beatles kind of behind after their famous Jesus comments. That rubbed you the wrong way?
Yeah, well, it was John Lennon who made the remark that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus Christ. And that's something, I was born and raised a Catholic, and it's tough for Catholics or Christians, hardcore Christians, to hear somebody say that, whether it's in jest or you're serious. John was unfortunately serious with what he was saying, that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. And that was the end for my being a Beatles fan. From then on, I just went other ways.
And those other ways included lots more radio and television. And ladies and gentlemen, you can read all about it in this fabulous book. It's called Hullabaloo, The Life and Misadventures of L.A. Radio Legend Dave Hull. I've been a fan for many years, Dave Hull, and I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, thank you, Gary. I really mean this. It's been a pleasure to talk to your audience up there in the Central Coast. They're marvelous people, and you have great weather. My wife, Jeanette, and I live in Palm Springs, where the temperature now is 112 degrees outside.
Just like when you were an airman.
Yes, that's right. That's why I can tolerate it. I've told Jeanette I can tolerate it because I lived through 135 degrees in the Sahara Desert. But the people that are here, we lock ourselves away and we turn on the air conditioning, and that's the last you see of us for about 90 days.
Well, again, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you for giving me the opportunity, and thank you. You can come to my place anytime you want.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Dave Hull. His new book, Hullabaloo, The Life and Misadventures of L.A. Radio Legend, Dave Hull. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.